Hello and welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. And this week, it's a little bit different, Randeep. It's our year in review edition for 2024. We're going to look back at some of the biggest stories and best moments from the past year. But before we get into all that, we're very excited to welcome a new sponsor to the show here on In the Booth.
That's right. We're ending off the year in style. In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles. Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. Welcome to Bells and Whistles.
Yeah, great to have Bells and Whistles on board. So that's an exciting new addition here to In the Booth. And, you know, Bells and Whistles, a great establishment to go catch the game, Randeep. They do sound up on the games as well.
Yep.
So really excited to have them on board. It's great to have them with us.
Yeah, great food, awesome beer selection. If you probably see me and Batch there at some point as well if you swing by there. So welcome aboard, Bells and Whistles.
So let's get in to our year in review for 2024. And this is always an interesting experiment to go through, Randeep, to try and recap an entire calendar year. Because as you do it, and we did this for the first time last year on this show, recapping the year that was in 2023, you look back and you realize how much has happened over the last 365 days or so. And you look back to January, where the Canucks were rolling off a great first half of the year. They had acquired Nikita Zadorov not too long before the end of 2023. They went on to bring in Elias Lindholm. They went on to have some struggles down the stretch and some injuries, but then ultimately went on that magical playoff run. And then you think about the playoff run, which is going to obviously take up a large part of the conversation that we're going to have on this show today. But then you also have to marry that with an offseason where a lot of changes happened and a first half to this season that certainly hasn't been as smooth as the first half was last year.
Yeah, I remember doing this show, last year? And let's be honest, Batch, there was a lot of positivity more recently, but going back a couple of years, there was a lot of heaviness with the team. Would they be able to make the playoffs? Would they be able to, you know, take a positive start and prolong it? And over the last 365, it's been mostly positive for this team. They changed the culture last year. And looking ahead, and we're going to talk a little bit about it a fair bit in today's show, actually, 2024 overall was an excellent year for Vancouver, excellent year for Vancouver hockey. And whether that was a team game, or whether that was individuals, whether that was for the coaching staff, there was a lot of positivity and a lot of growth for the organization.
Yeah, and the way we're going to do this show, and we put this out to you, the listener, we came up with six topics or six questions that we thought would be really good to look at here as we come to the end of 2024. So we're going to go through these one by one throughout the show, and we elicited your responses. So we'll go through some of the topics that you guys brought up. Unfortunately, we won't be able to get to everyone because there were a ton of you that wrote in with your responses. But throughout the show, we're going to look back at some of the best moments of 2024 as contributed by you, the listener, some of the best stories of 2024, some of the biggest surprises of 2024, some of the biggest disappointments from this past year. And then we're going to finish off looking ahead to 2025 with your biggest questions for this team heading into the new year and your Canucks New Year's resolutions. So let's begin, Randy, by looking back on some of the best moments of 2024 as contributed by our listeners. And without a doubt, at the top of the list in terms of things that people submitted was the Game 4 comeback in Round 1 against the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, what a game that was. Call it the Brock Besser game, where with seconds left, he ends up tying it up. That whole idea where it looked like the team, you know, was out of it. It looked like they were in a situation where, you know, that game had been lost. And for them to show that resiliency that we saw so much last season and storm back through, the leading goal scorer, 40 goal scorer, Brock Besser, and just the peaks and valleys of that game, Batch. It was playoff hockey at its finest for the winning team, of course. On the other side, I'm sure Nashville didn't feel that way, but that was high on my list, no doubt. I don't know if it was number one, but that was no doubt. I think if you're talking about a crescendo moment where that was maybe the height of the roller coaster, it's a great moment to look back on.
Yeah, and, you know, we had different people contribute. Some people said winning that game in overtime. Some people said the Besser tying goal specifically, which completed a hat trick for him in that game with just 8 seconds left to force overtime, and then it was only 1:02 into OT that the big trade deadline acquisition, or all-star break acquisition, I guess, more specifically, in Elias Lindholm paid dividends by scoring the winner. And that was it kind of encapsulated that series where the Canucks weren't necessarily great throughout that game. They weren't necessarily great throughout that series, but they had guys come up in big moments for their team to find a way to win, to the point of Andrew Brunette at the end of that series saying that he'd been involved in the NHL for a long time, and this was the first time where he wasn't actually sure that what he deemed to be the best team in that series won the series. Now, you know, many Canuck fans will look at that and say, oh, it's sour grapes. But I think it also speaks to how clutch this group was at finding a way to get wins, even if they weren't playing at their best, and even if they didn't have their top two goaltenders in the crease, of course, as well, which we'll come to talk about later on in the show.
Well, I think the Brock Besser hat trick had a lot to do with that moment. It was the headlines, but the fact that Elias Lindholm got that overtime goal, it was, you know, a pretty difficult stretch for him to end off the season. He wasn't fully healthy, but that was a moment in game four where you look back and say, all right, it showed you maybe what the Vancouver Canucks could do with a player like Elias Lindholm, with a player like Nikita Zadorov in that lineup. Remember, Zadorov had some big plays in that first round series as well. He scored a goal. He scored a couple of goals in that series. He was a player that could skate the puck out of the zone. So that, I think that game four culminated of, okay, wait a second. They've got the star power, and even though Thatcher Demko is not playing, all these other guys are starting to chip in their own way. What could be for this team? And that was where I think Elias Lindholm started to maybe repay and say, hey, the regular season wasn't great, but I can still be a difference maker in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that goal, and I had kind of, and this is going to sound like retroactively patting myself on the back here, but when Lindholm had
allowed.
Yeah, exactly. So I had been saying down the stretch when Lindholm was struggling that I thought he would be the kind of guy that would chip in with a timely goal in the playoffs, and it would kind of paper over some of the cracks of his struggles down the stretch. And that's pretty much exactly what happened. Like, if we look back at Elias Lindholm's time as a Vancouver Canuck overall, which was all encapsulated within this year of 2024, the thing that people are going to remember Elias Lindholm for 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, 20 years down the road, is that goal. And they're not going to remember some of the struggles he had after being acquired and playing down the stretch in the regular season, which ultimately didn't really end up mattering with the team winning the Pacific Division anyway.
And that's fair. That's, you know, that's a moment where it was kind of the, okay, I've arrived in Vancouver, I can do this. Honorable mention, and number one on my list, I'll be honest with you, was game one of that playoff series. The best moment for 2024 was the home game that Vancouver hosted, Batch. For me, just looking back, being in that building of the first playoff home game in a decade for this team, there was a different energy in the city, in the arena that day as well. So I look at that series for sure, but game one, standing there next to you and just looking around and saying, wow, can't believe we're back. It's as loud as I've ever heard that arena.
Yeah, and there were a couple of people that voted and submitted that. Austin said just the atmosphere overall at the playoff home games was his favorite moment from 2024. Kenna said puck drop in game one with the high expectations to begin the playoffs too. So, yeah, let's take a moment here and talk about that atmosphere inside the building, because I think it's something that, with the struggles over the last decade, had felt so far away, and you almost forgot the way this city can be and the way this fan base can be when they've got a playoff team to get behind them. that moment, that night in particular, you know, the two atmospheres that jump to mind for me are certainly game one against the Predators and then game seven against the Oilers too. The energy was palpable in that building, and it was very cool to see after a long time waiting to get that atmosphere back.
It was like a city, a fan base fell in love with the sport again. And Canucks fans, hardcore fans, have always been there through the thick and thin, riding the lows as well as the highs. But for that casual fan to really get glued in and say, all right, it's a Canucks playoff game night. You know, this team's got, you know, I got skin in the game again. So it felt like the entire community came back together, whether it was in the rink, whether it was some of the community viewings that the team was doing. It just, honestly, you know, go to Scott Road Zellies, go to Abbotsford Zellies. It was all kind of culminating. People were waiting for that moment. So I thought, you know, both of those games you mentioned, of course, those were huge moments. But the beginning stands out a little bit to me just because it got to that point slowly. This team had to prove to the fan base that they were different, that they were a resilient group, that, you know, in the first month of the season, they were not beating teams. They were smacking them around. You know, four-goal game from Brock Besser, absolutely annihilating the Oilers in the first two meetups of the season. There's a real belief in this team, and I felt like that game one, all of that positivity was there. There was not so much worry in that game like the game seven. Of course, there's, you know, there's that nervous energy. Against Nashville, it was like, we're back. And that atmosphere to me felt a little different than the other one.
Another moment that people voted for as the top moment of the year for 2024 was Quinn Hughes winning the Norris Trophy. And, you know, for a franchise that has been starved of an elite defenseman basically in their entire history up until now, and no disrespect to guys like Alex Edler or whoever else you want to name from the past that have been great defensemen for this organization, but we've never seen anyone like Quinn Hughes in Canuck colors. And I think prior to this past year, there was a conversation around Quinn Hughes in Vancouver that kind of mirrored the team, where Canuck fans love him, they know how good he is, but he doesn't get his flowers or his respect around the league. And in many ways, he's overshadowed by Cale Makar. And we've even seen that with the Norris discussion early in the 2024-2025 season. So I think that moment where the hockey establishment recognized Quinn Hughes as the best defenseman in the league for last season was not just a big moment for him individually, but it was a big moment for the Canucks fan base as well.
Well, let's be honest. He's the best defenseman that this franchise has had, and we're just talking, you know what, he's not even at 400 games in his career yet, so that's how good he is. But 2024 was the year of Quinn Hughes, where Vancouver, I think he elevated his game in general, where Vancouver was saying, wow, this is a special player. He's even better than we thought he'd be. And then, to your point, the rest of the league kind of woke up, and you know, you patted yourself on the back a little bit earlier. I'm going to pat myself on the back here. Last year in September, I was in Toronto, and the social media team for Sportsnet was shooting bold predictions for 2023-2024 season, and mine was Quinn Hughes is going to win the Norris, and he was even better than I thought he'd be, Batch. Like, I thought this was a player that was going to be a little bit more competitive. He won in an absolute landslide. So last year, the hockey world, not only realizing how good he is, but he also elevated his game beyond anything that I think a lot of folks maybe thought he could, based on year by year, he just gets better and better and better. And the way he's able to break ankles on players, the way he's aggressively attacking the middle of the ice, the way he's able to, you know, dangle and skate and attack off the backhand, whether it's down the left-hand side, down the right-hand side, it doesn't matter. There's a real element, a new element to his game. And listen, he's a great defender too. He's able to use his skating to get back in transition to take away chances. So this was the year in a lot of ways of Quinn Hughes, where he elevated his game to the next level.
Yeah, and one thing that always impresses me about Hughes, and this is a perfect transition into our next topic, which was the best story around the Canucks from 2024, and Jay voted this for the best story. He said Hughes' evolution. And I think that's a great way to characterize it, because this is a guy that is always trying to grow his game, always trying to get better. We see him come back every offseason into the new year with something else that he's clearly worked on in his game. And, you know, this year, I think we could talk about how effective he's been at getting shots through on net. You know, last year we talked a lot about how aggressive he was and he attacked down the left-hand side and scored some goals that way. But he's creating more by getting pucks through from up top in the zone, which I think was a needed addition to his game. But that's the most impressive thing, is he was already you know, one of the best, if not the best defenseman in the league as he was last season. And yet he's still trying to grow his game, still trying to add new wrinkles, still trying to find ways to be more effective game in and game out.
Yeah, those responses that came in with Quinn Hughes is the best story of 2024. I agree with that because, as I mentioned, this was the year of Quinn Hughes. 92 points, an absolute menace to play against. This is an individual that, you mentioned it, his not want, but his need to get better every single year. The first, you know, 3 years ago, he focused on his minus rating and how he wanted to correct that, and he is better defensively, much better defensively. Last year, it was being more aggressive, whether it was down the left-hand side or the middle of the ice. He's done that, and this year, it's been working on his shot, which, you know, getting shot attempts, shots on goal, leading the team in shots on goal this year. And also, that having that target of scoring 20 goals is something that he mentioned at the beginning of the year. So he's an individual that status quo is not something he believes in. He's got to be better and better every single year. And he is your captain, right? That is something that if your captain is willing to say, hey, I'm the best player, or I want to be the best player, I want to continually improve every single year, there's a trickle-down effect throughout the entire roster. So with Quinn Hughes winning the Norris, I think the evolution, the way that the listener put it, is a great way. And here's the thing. 2024 was the year of Quinn Hughes. There's nothing saying 2025 and 2026 can't be either. That's his mentality, and he's always looking to get better.
Another story that was voted by a number of people as the best story around the Canucks from 2024 was the return of Dakota Joshua. And, of course, Joshua was training in the offseason. He was skating here in Vancouver, getting ready to ramp up for training camp when he was diagnosed with testicular cancer and had to step away to get that taken care of. He had surgery, had to recover from that, missed the preseason and training camp and the start of the regular season, but got back into the lineup. And, you know, I think it's still taken him a little bit of time to ramp his game up here, but, you know, anytime you hear something as serious as a cancer diagnosis, there's always going to be a ton of concern. And the fact that Joshua has been able to come through that and get back into the NHL lineup has been a great story, more so off the ice than on the ice for this Canucks team, just because of, you know, how much cancer touches all of us and, you know, the impact it has in people's lives. And not only the fact that Joshua was able to have a full recovery and get back into the lineup, but that he spoke out about what he went through and, you know, has brought some awareness and has advocated for other people going through the same thing.
Yeah, it's not an easy situation for Dakota Joshua. Very tough to come back from that diagnosis, first of all, and then to be in the public forum where you are in front of thousands of people in the arena and hundreds of thousands of people on television or on the airwaves, and you're expected to produce. And it was not going to be easy for Dakota to come back and produce at a high level. There's going to be time where he's got to ramp up, and he's still going through that right now. But Batch, you see those flashes, whether it was the goal, you know, against Utah using his speed, whether it was the first goal of the season he scored, where it was once again scoring off transition. He's had games where he's had 7 or 8 hits. He's been, you know, using his length in the neutral zone and breaking up plays. It's not being pieced together maybe fully in a 60-minute effort yet, or a 15-minute effort yet. His ice time's not quite there. But the fact that he is on the ice and he's contributing and he's building his game is huge. Anytime somebody goes through a diagnosis, let alone the treatment, and then you're coming back, that is a huge and positive story to begin with. And it is such a unique circumstance where not only do you have to go through this in a public forum, but, you know, I'm sure, and Dakota's talked about it to a certain degree, the emotional aspect, the emotional toll you have to have internally, and the you know, all the things you're thinking about as you're not only trying to navigate your career, but your life. We've all dealt with cancer in some way or another, whether it's a family member, a friend. Some of our listeners may have dealt with it themselves. It's a very personal and very individual battle, but I think the strength of the team, and everybody's been on his, you know, in his corner, and the team since day one, and his teammates having his back, that certainly helps. But the fact that he's on the ice is unbelievable. So yeah, his game's not quite there yet, but he'll get there. He'll get there. And it's just great to see him on the ice.
And on a more personal note, and I thank Farhan Lalji for writing in, and he actually answered all six questions here, talking about our good friend Joey Kenward, who works with us here at the radio station and hosts the Canucks Connected alumni show every week, which you can hear right here on our airwaves. So he answered best moment, the return of Joey Kenward to the rink for game night. Best story, the return of Joey Kenward to the rink for game night. Biggest surprise, return of Joey Kenward to the rink for game night.
Love it.
Biggest disappointment, that he didn't see Joey sooner. Biggest question heading into 2025, how many games will Joey attend? And his New Year's resolution is to hug Joey more. And so certainly, you know, our good friend Joey Kenward and his battle with leukemia throughout 2024 is something that we all followed and supported him on. And it's great to see him on the mend and back at it here at the radio station with us, too.
Absolutely. And Batch, you know, as well as I do, you know, we get a lot of text messages. We exchange text messages. Joey is an awesome dude, a fun-loving guy. Just to have Joey back in the fold, it's awesome to see him looking healthy. And he's spending time not only with his colleagues, but also with his family, doing the things he loves. So shout out to Joey. Love to Joey.
And now let's move on to the next topic of conversation. The biggest surprise from 2024. And people went in a couple of different directions on this one. But for the most part, there were two names that came up in people's vote for the biggest surprise of 2024. The first was Kiefer Sherwood. The second was Kevin Lankinen. And who knew, when these two guys were on the Nashville Predators playing the Vancouver Canucks in that opening round series, that they would be the two names brought up most often as the biggest surprise for the Canucks in 2024. But that has been very pleasant that both of those former Predators have joined the Canucks and played big impacts in the first half of their 2024-2025 season.
Yeah, I want to start in Kevin Lankinen here, because not only has his effort and the way he's played been a surprise, and that's no discredit to him. He's been a really solid goaltender in the NHL, but he, you know, essentially played such a high level, set an NHL record for the amount of wins to kick off a season on the road. He was, in a lot of games, the Vancouver Canucks' best player. And it was not only that, but it was a surprise that the Canucks could get him for less than $1 million. They essentially played a hard bargain. And with Lankinen, he signed for less money than most people expected. He hadn't been signed until training camp. So I think it was the surprise that he, A, signed with the Vancouver Canucks, given the cap issues that they had and the cap, how tight they were against the cap. And the other element of surprise, obviously, being his high level of play. He's a quality goaltender, but the way that he, you know, really performed in the first month of the season, first month and a half of the season especially, a fantastic surprise for this team.
Yeah, and so has Sherwood been a fantastic surprise for this team as well, where, you know, I'll speak for myself, but I think you could probably agree, Randeep, that I really liked the signing in the summer. We had seen the kind of impact he had in a depth role for the Predators in that series, and how relentless he was on the forecheck and physical and could get under opponent's skin. So I thought that was a great depth add. But even then, to be talking in December about the fact that he's leading the NHL in hits and nearly has as many hits through the first half of the season as he had all year last year in Nashville, and has already surpassed his goal total from last season or any season in the NHL. He's already hit a career high in goals as a member of the Canucks. I think that surpasses any expectations I had of him, and I was already prepared to endorse the signing and to think that he was a good fit in here in Vancouver. But I certainly didn't expect the offense that he's provided and the level of physicality that he has been able to bring consistently, I think, is the most important part for a team that has struggled to find consistency at times early this season. You cannot doubt what Kiefer Sherwood's going to give you on a night in and night out basis.
Yeah, there's three levels to his game: the physicality, the goal scoring, and of course, you know, he's also shown some playmaking as well, where he's setting up his teammates for opportunities. A couple of things on the physicality: Dakota Joshua being out and, you know, having to ramp up, obviously a loss of physicality for Vancouver. Kiefer Sherwood had to step up there. JT Miller going on his leave of absence. But even before that, when he was playing, he wasn't as physical because he was nursing some sort of injury. He was dealing with something. Kiefer Sherwood was vital at the beginning of the year for that too. So, you know, without Sherwood in the lineup, this team would be struggling from a physical aspect. So luckily he was able to pick that up. And Batch, during training camp, I remember on this very show, we talked about, you know, penny stocks. Who would be that player that could move up the lineup? Who'd you bet on? And I remember we talked about it here where, hey, if you got a penny, throw it on Kiefer Sherwood. And he's been exactly that. He can play anywhere on the lineup, in the lineup, whether it's the fourth line and score goals or whether playing, you know, next to Pettersson. He's been an absolute difference maker. So a heck of a surprise for the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, he's that rare player that's got the offensive skill, but also he is tough. He is as tough as they come, with a little bit of pest in him too.
Yeah, and we are nothing if not accountable here on this show as well, because I already took the opportunity to pat myself on the back. I'll also be accountable and say that I was wrong when I picked Daniel Sprong as my penny stock in training camp to trend in the right direction. So, you know, we don't bat 1,000 here on In the Booth. Let's put it that way.
I was giving us both credit for Kiefer Sherwood. I wasn't going to claim that for myself, but you're an honest man. You just took the blame there on the Sprong pick, but it's all good. I was trying to play a team game there.
Well, at the end of the day, we are a team, so we win and lose together, don't we? Another storyline that got voted as the biggest surprise for 2024, and we also saw it a lot in our next topic, the biggest disappointment from 2024, was the play of Elias Pettersson. And that's how we can transition here from the biggest surprise to the biggest disappointment, because this was both a surprise and a disappointment, especially when you look at how well Pettersson played in the first half, basically leading up to the start of the 2024 calendar year. And I know his game kind of trended in the wrong direction coming out of the All-Star break, but from the numbers he put up in the first half last year to the struggles that he had down the stretch and into the playoffs, and then how some of those have carried forward to a certain extent into the first half of this season, I think I would agree with many of our listeners saying that based on the way he was producing at the start of last year, it's both a big surprise and a big disappointment around this team.
It is, and it's shocking because the beginning of the season last year was fantastic. He was looking like maybe a top five player, a top 10 player in the NHL. It was guns a-blazing for Elias Pettersson. And then you get to the turn of the calendar, and he was, you know, 72 points in 78 games, basically from last January to this date at the time of recording, which is top three on the Vancouver Canucks, and still shy of, you know, being a point per game player. Where you compare that with JT Miller, 74 points in 67 games, Quinn Hughes, 84 points in 78 games. But Batch, it's more than the points, because I think we can agree that even throughout this stretch, Elias Pettersson, for the most part, has been decent defensively. He showed some good habits this year defensively, but he hasn't been able to win his matchups. And that's, I think, the most, you know, worrying part, where if you legitimately have a 1-2 punch at the center position, JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, if you want to contend for a Stanley Cup and you want to go to the Western Conference Final, you know, we're talking about playing the Connor McDavids, the Leon Draisaitls, that, you know, Jack Eichel and William Karlsson, who the Canucks saw very recently. You have to make sure that you win your battles consistently. And unfortunately for Pettersson, in 2024, that was a challenge. He wasn't winning those, even in that Nashville series, when he was paired up against, you know, a Colton Sissons or a Michael McCarron. At best, he was breaking even, and they ended up winning that series. So it was 2023. The end of that year was great for Pettersson. 2024 has been an absolute roller coaster ride.
Yeah, it certainly has. And I think you're right to bring up the matchup side of things, but also the play driving side of things. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been some of the concern more so this season around Pettersson, is it's great to produce. And, you know, he had a stretch certainly in November where he was putting up points, and you always want that from your top players. But I think it's more important to be able to drive play and, to your point, win your matchup than it is that you're filling the score sheet. And I think many Canuck fans would take a Pettersson that's driving play as a sort of underlying sign that he's trending in the right direction at this point. You know, like coaches always talk about the process as opposed to the results. I think many Canuck fans would rather see better process around Pettersson rather than results in terms of production, because ultimately, you know, if you get into the playoffs and you get into those big moments, it's less about individual stats and it's more about what happens for your team when you're on the ice and how can you impact the game in that regard. And let's be honest, regardless of the struggles that this team has had at times through the first part of this season and sort of the Jekyll and Hyde way that they've played either on the road or at home or from game to game more recently, ultimately none of what's happened will matter if they can perform at the right time of the year in the playoffs. And I think that's where a lot of the worry around Pettersson's game is in the fan base, and rightfully so. If you can't drive play now in October, November, December, January, if you're not winning your matchups at that time of the year, how can you be expected to do it in April or May or June?
Yeah, and you know, another wrinkle to that is also right now you're going from team to team, 1 of 82. In April, May, June, teams game plan around you. They can zero in on your faults. They can zero in on maybe some of your deficiencies. It is a physical game, but it's also a mental game where teams try to grind you down. Right now with Pettersson, I think the biggest issue with him is A, consistency and confidence. It's the two C's for me right now, where you have to make sure that high level Elias Pettersson is seen more than that player that's kind of middling. And he could be, you know, are you getting the first line, Petey? Are you getting like maybe a third line centerman on some days? You got to find that consistency. And confidence. When you can see him think the game, Batch, it's usually not a good sign. When, you know, there's a stretch of the season for about a month while JT Miller was on leave where Petey was more assertive. And since JT's been back, there's been a little bit of a drop-off from Pettersson's game. He's not as assertive. And to be fair, JT hasn't had all that much success either. So this is something he's going to have to figure out. And, you know, the biggest disappointment for me for 2024, it kind of dovetails into the Elias Pettersson conversation, but I look at this Canucks power play based on the cooks that they have in the kitchen. This should be a Michelin star restaurant. It's not right now. It's not. It's based on, you know, they have stretches where they're in the top 10, but it's just, you know, goals come in bunches and then they go dry. And a part of that is Elias Pettersson. A part of that's JT Miller, but it's the collective where it just feels like in 2024, even though they had some highs, they've never found that consistency. It's looked too mechanical. And at certain moments, it's looked disjointed.
Yeah, absolutely. And that ties a lot into that conversation about Elias Pettersson. And we'll see where things trend into 2025, because I think you won't be surprised by this. Elias Pettersson is brought up alongside the name of another player on that Canuck power play in terms of one of the biggest questions for people heading in to the new year. We're going to get to that in just a moment. Quickly, though, before we break, another story that was listed by numerous listeners as one of the biggest disappointments from 2024 was Thatcher Demko and his injury issues. Obviously, went down late in the regular season last year, missed some time, battled back in time to start game one against the Nashville Predators, and then ultimately suffered another knee injury that held him out for more than 230 days until he was able to make his return. And I think that's one thing that we can sort of look towards 2025 and hope for Thatcher Demko, Randeep, is better health going forward, because this was a year to forget for Demko in that regard.
Yeah, and I can understand why folks would look at it as a disappointment, but anytime it's an injury, you just feel for the guy. And with Thatcher Demko, the popliteus, you know, Merriam-Webster comes out with the word of the year in 2024. I'm going to declare the 2024 word of the year for the Vancouver Canucks as the popliteus, because this is an injury that nobody had ever heard of before, and all of Vancouver, all of the hockey world, and especially here in Vancouver, were basically experts on it within 24 hours of finding out this injury. But it was a disappointment from a hockey perspective. But Thatcher Demko, he's come back. He's come back with, you know, after being through an absolute grind with this injury. But, yeah, you do wonder if he's healthy against Nashville and definitely Edmonton. Does that series turn out a little differently when you've got your number one goaltender back there? So I can understand folks looking back at that and saying that was disappointing.
You're listening to the Year in Review here on In the Booth on Sportsnet 650. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda looking back on the year that was. We're going to step aside for a break. On the other side, we're going to look ahead. And we're going to find out Canuck fans' biggest questions heading into 2025 and their Canuck New Year's resolutions. That's still to come right here on In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. Brendan Batchelor alongside Randeep Janda. As I always remind you, if you're listening to the show on the radio, you missed any part of it, it lives as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. You subscribe to that. You get Canucks Central every weekday with Sat and Reach. You get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick. And you get In the Booth every week as well. And Randeep, In the Booth, now brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
That's right. It is brought to you by Bells and Whistles. Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. It is our spot, and I am known to watch some soccer games there myself occasionally as well, Batch.
Yeah, absolutely. Great place to watch the game, regardless of what game you're watching. This is the year in review on In the Booth, but now it's time to look ahead. And we asked you, the listener, to submit some of your biggest questions for this team going forward into 2025. And we got a variety of ways of phrasing pretty much the same question. So I'm going to go to Brian, who wrote in and asked, can the Canucks fire on all cylinders again? And Jordan said, was last season a flash in the pan, or is this team for real? And these are really different versions of the same question. What is this Vancouver Canucks team? Which, you know, through nearly half of the season, I don't know if we can adequately answer yet. Part of that is because of injuries and guys they haven't had in the lineup to this point. But we also haven't seen them play really with any consistency in their game, either for good or for bad. And that's why this is still an open question here at the end of 2024.
Yeah, firing in all cylinders for me, for this team, means being responsible defensively, kind of like they were against Vegas, but also being able to have your star players, your top six, and of course you're going to have your bottom six step up, but they can't be the drivers of this team. JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, the power play are going to be the ones that generally get you the points. And of course, Quinn Hughes, but Quinn Hughes has been consistent all 2024, all season long. To me, firing on all cylinders means stick to your staples, something that hasn't been consistent this year. They need to be more consistent on that front. And then your game breakers need to be your game breakers, Batch. That is the recipe for success for this team. And until that happens, you know, that consistency word, it's going to pop up in the city a lot. So for, you know, the question I had is very similar to that, but I'm going to zero in a little bit more. Can the top six step up? Because I feel like this team, when they play a defensive style, they have that defensive identity. Is it fully consistent yet? No, but it's in their DNA. But you still need star power. You still need your game breakers to have that special moment, or at the very least, drive play, as you mentioned in the last segment. And right now that is lacking.
That's the next question that people put to us most often after essentially, can this team find its game? Was last year an aberration, or can they be the team that we saw have so much success last year? The next one we got was, I'll go to Lorenzo, who wrote in and asked, can Petey and JT coexist? We had another person write in, ask Miller or Pettersson. Someone else said, who stays, who goes? And look, I don't want to play too much into this narrative because I think there's a lot we don't know about this situation. So I don't want to get into the game of speculating about interpersonal relationships. So I think the way that you bring it up is a better way to analyze this, which is, what do we know? What can we talk about? Performance on the ice. And in particular, for Elias Pettersson, but I think also for JT Miller, and in general, for the Canucks' top players, they need to find a way to be more consistent and produce more effectively and drive play more effectively, as we already talked about. That's the conversation I want to have more than getting into the soap opera speculation of Pettersson and Miller and what's their relationship like. At the end of the day, all of that stuff will be quieted. And I've said this about the Canucks for years, and this has always been something we've talked about when this team has struggled. When you're not performing on the ice, the off-ice storylines are magnified. So you know how you fix that? You start playing better, you start playing more consistently, you start winning more games.
For sure. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion. I know on the post-game show with Sat and Bick as well, I've been a part of the discussion of, you know, what can Rick Tocchet do to get more out of his top six? And, of course, you can tinker a little bit. You can move Sherwood up to the top line or the second line. You can move a couple of guys up and down. But, Batch, we know this. This truly solid, really good, great players in this league make those around them better. And I think that's what we need to see from this team. We've seen that from JT and Elias in the past. We saw it as recently as last year. But we need to see it this year. We haven't been able to see it consistently. So I think it comes down to the old Bill Belichick. Just do your job, right? There's been a lot going on with this team this year. And at some point, of course, it wears people down. If you're dealing with injuries, if you're dealing with, you know, leaves, if you're dealing with a teammate that's going through a health concern, it is a heavy start to the year. But things are somewhat normalizing now. The only player that's really out with an injury is Filip Hronek, and he's an important one, but still, there are some good vibes coming back to this team, and you can't be, even though November and October and, you know, maybe even certain parts of December were a certain way, you have to kind of turn a corner here, and I think this goes to the leadership of the team, whether that's the top six, whether that's the captain. You have to kind of steer the ship in that direction. It's easier said than done, but it comes with your play. Do your job, win your matchups. And with Rick Tocchet, there's only so many lineup changes he can do. There's things that management can do. But as a player, your job is to say, I got to win my matchups. And right now, you know, that's on not only JT and Elias, but, you know, Brock Besser. He's been pretty cold since he came back from his injury. Of course, it takes time. But that's another player that I would look at and say, you got to elevate your game as well.
And it's appropriate that you bring up Brock Besser, because I was amazed that of all the people we heard from, only one person submitted this as their biggest question of 2025. And I think it speaks to, you know, sort of the feeling in the market right now and some of the narratives around Miller and Pettersson that this was not at the forefront. But Glenn writes in, and his biggest question heading into 2025 is about Brock Besser. Will he re-sign? Will he be let go? Or ultimately, will he be traded as a pending unrestricted free agent right now? And I think that's a big question for the future of this team. This is a 40-goal scorer, and we don't know where he's going to be playing right now beyond the end of this season.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of negotiations that are, I'm sure, at least discussion that is going on behind the scenes, and there's been reports by Nick Kypreos and others about what that number can look like. It is a big question, but here's the thing. I think if you're the management team, you're looking for clarity on what Brock Besser is. We know last year he was a 40-goal scorer. This year he's trending towards 30-something. But that matters, right? If you're talking a long-term extension, is there clarity on what is that market value? What is the new market value for a 30? You know, does Brock and his representation see themselves as a 30-goal scorer, a 40-goal scorer? And what is that market now? Because with the cap going up, Batch, you know, yesterday's price is no longer today's price. So it's going to be a really interesting kind of dance here for Brock Besser, but not only him, but other players as well across the league to say, all right, has the market adjusted with the cap going up to just under $93 million?
Yeah, and that's going to be a storyline that sort of overshadows a lot of things with a lot of teams. But specifically the Besser one, I think, is interesting because I do wonder if the team's form on the ice is going to dictate which way this goes. We've talked so much, and we're going to get to this in a moment with New Year's resolutions. We've talked so much about, you know, what could the Canucks do to complement this group, to add to this group. But I'll play the devil's advocate for a moment and bring up the possibility that the Canucks' struggles, or their inconsistency at the very least, continues into 2025. You know, maybe they're a team that's in a wild card spot, or, you know, battling to try and prove that they can make the playoffs. How does the Canucks' form on the ice inform the decision-making on Brock Besser? Because if the two sides can't come together on an agreement or meet in the middle on a number before the trade deadline, then this is an organization that does have to consider moving this player. And I think they're more likely to consider it if this team continues to struggle to find consistency into the new year.
Well, that's the key there, that final part. If you're not able to right the ship, so to speak, where they're now a sub-600 point percentage team, there's a little bit of gap between the top three teams in the Pacific and the Vancouver Canucks. Are you in a position where you're going to have to say, not only do we need to shake something up, but also it becomes an asset management question of, if this player, there's a chance he's not going to stay in Vancouver, can you afford to let him go for free? And, you know, if your team is in it to win it, if you're a playoff team, if you're top three in the Pacific and you're going for it, you might be willing to take that risk. Some managers are not, but some would say, hey, we're in it to win it. That's all right if somebody walks away, as long as we have a chance to win. But you're right. If you're a wild card team, if you're somebody that's fighting for a playoff spot, you have to look at that question differently. And, you know, is that a situation where you say, this is an impending UFA, could you pick up somebody younger, potentially with term, and have some cost certainty moving forward? That is, I think, a question the Canucks will have to address if they continue to drop games and there's a little bit of a gap between the top three teams in the division and the wildcard teams.
And finally, we get to our New Year's resolutions for the Vancouver Canucks in 2025. And as submitted by you, the listeners, again, there were a variety of ways of saying the same thing. Justin said, improve the decor. Jordan said, fix the defense. Lorenzo said, a top four defenseman without giving up Lekkerimäki or Willander. Jacob said, a top four right shot D more specifically. So that seems to be the number one thing on Canuck fans' wish lists heading into the holiday season and into the new year, is this management group making a move to shore up the back end and give Quinn Hughes some support on the blue line.
Not at all surprised to hear that. You look at that right side of defense, that is a need. We all see it, but who is that player and what is that price? If you're a player like Rasmus Anderson, there's going to be a long line of teams that are going to be jockeying for position. There will be a bidding war, I'm sure, if he is available. The other options, like a David Savard, older, very different type of player, but still, there's going to be a want there as a potential shutdown defenseman who's won a cup. So there's going to be a number of, you know, opportunities, maybe a few opportunities, but a number of suitors for players like that. I'm going to add one thing to the defenseman question, though. I think not only does this team need a defenseman, I think they need a 3C. And the reason I say that is no slight to Pugh Suter, but I feel like Pugh Suter is going to be needed in the top six as a winger to play on one of those top two lines, probably near closer to a Brock Besser or a J.T. Miller. So you have a bit of a security blanket. I don't know if Nils Åman or Atu Ratu are consistently ready for that spot at the NHL level. You might have to add some center depth as well, in addition to picking up a defenseman.
Well, Randy, we're out of time here on our year in review edition of In the Booth. We will be back in the new year with new editions of In the Booth, but this is also our opportunity to wish our listeners a happy holiday season and to thank you for tuning in every week with us here on In the Booth.
Absolutely. The amount of engagement we get on a weekly basis. Thanks for your love. Thanks for listening in 2024. We've had a lot of fun, and hopefully we've got a lot more in store for 2025. So Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and Happy New Year. We'll talk to you in 2025.
And this has been In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.